Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of Microbe Talk, the podcast by the Microbiology Society. My name is Katie O'Connor and in this special episode of Microbe Talk, Eva Schultes and I spoke with four early career microbiologists about their careers so far, how the COVID-19 pandemic has impacted their research plans and magnified existing gaps in the research system, and what they think needs to be done to safeguard their future. The COVID-19 pandemic has had a huge impact on every aspect of everyone's lives. Rolling national lockdowns and a lack of certainty about the future have in many cases thrown plans for career progression into disarray. Early career researchers in particular have experienced a huge number of obstacles to their professional development these past few years. In November 2021, the Microbiology Society released the position statement Safeguarding the Future of the Microbiology Research and Innovation Workforce. This addressed some of these issues and revealed the extent of the problems. We were joined by early career microbiologists Colman O'Cathale, Raphael Galle, Natalie Ring McBrien, and Helen Brown. This special episode of Microbe Talk is going to be in two parts, and they are both group discussions, so everyone will be chatting and asking questions to the rest of the group. I hope you enjoy this episode.
So before we get started, it'd be great if we could just go around the table and if you could tell us a little bit more about yourself and your academic journey so far. Or should we start with Galle?
So hi everyone. My name is Raphael Peter Galle, but I prefer you call me Galle, yeah? So I'm a final year PhD student with the University of Sheffield, and my PhD basically is on looking for novel inhibitors of cellulases of bacteria, like oral pathogens. So these pathogens actually use some of these enzymes to cleave salicylic acid at the time of endophosphate glycol, but I'm not here to tell you all about my research. So what I'm doing is trying to see if we can get synthetic or plant-derived compounds that could actually inhibit or stop the activity of this bacterial enzyme on host glycoprotein chain. So yeah, basically that's what my project is all about. However, I had a BSc in microbiology and genetics, and then my master's in pharmaceutical microbiology. So you're now seeing where the compound and the microorganism is coming in my PhD.
Thank you, Galle. Yeah. Colman?
Yeah, I'm Colman O'Call. I was supposed to finish my PhD in the middle of the pandemic in 2020. And I took on a full-time job in September 2020. My current job is a bioinformatician at the European Bioinformatics Institute while taking on a free 6-month extension to my PhD because I had to. It was the pandemic. Things didn't go so well. But yeah, as a result, you know, I did end up finishing, and my current job really isn't academic anymore. I've kind of stepped into a halfway house of being not quite left the research community entirely, but I don't do any research myself. I'm a research supporter in a bigger scheme, running services. And, you know, that was really part of the pandemic, you know, like, but I couldn't be happier now.
Good. Thanks, Colman. Nat?
Hi, I'm Nat. So I'm currently a postdoc. I did a bachelor's in biochemistry, and then I started working for the Medical Research Council as a graduate intern. And at first I was kind of just like general dog's body. I was organizing meetings, taking minutes. That was actually quite fun. I got to go to a lot of international meetings, but I kept saying, oh, I'm quite interested in bioinformatics. And then as it happened, a few of the staff went off on maternity leave at the same time. So I kind of just slotted into there. I didn't really have a background in bioinformatics, but I just learned on the job. And then really loved doing that. Actually, at the same time, I did a postgraduate diploma long distance in science communication, because I kind of thought, oh, one of these two directions I'm going to go in. And then just saw a PhD advertised that I really liked the look of, which was bioinformatics-based nanopore sequencing. So I did that PhD. Again, the same thing kind of happened towards the end of that, so I just fell into a postdoc that was my perfect like dream project. So I actually started my postdoc up in Edinburgh before I'd finished my PhD at the end of 2019. So during the first lockdown, I was being pregnant and also finishing my PhD and also starting my postdoc.
Oh, wow.
So it was a busy time. And so, yeah, and then I got seconded onto a COVID project while I was being pregnant and doing my PhD and my postdoc. Went back onto my postdoc project for a couple of months and then was off on maternity leave for most of last year. So now I've been on this postdoc supposedly for over 2 years, but I really just feel like I'm just getting into the swing of things with it.
And I'm Helen and I'm a postdoc down in Cardiff. So I've been postdocing now for about 7 years. So I just, I was about 6 months into a 3 year postdoc when the pandemic started. And obviously I was hoping that at the end of this postdoc, I'd be, competitive for lectureships and really kind of looking at that next step. But obviously then the pandemic happened. So that's kind of changed what I plan now.
Thank you very much. You talked a little bit about this, but can you go into more detail about what exactly happened when the pandemic hit, whereabouts you were in your career and how it affected your career? Lynn, do you want to go first?
Yeah, sure, I'll start. I guess it's the earliest of some of the careers. Like I said at the beginning, I mean, I was due to finish my PhD in September 2020, and having the pandemic close everything down in March 2020 meant really lots of things weren't available. I mean, at that point it was go home, we don't know what's going to happen. It was kind of like, it was the mad days, the Wild West pandemic, because everyone was like, oh, it'll be over 2 weeks, see you in a while. So nobody was really planning for the future and for the futures of the people that were really trying to finish up. And it's kind of one of those, it's supposed to be that golden period in your PhD, that last 6 months where things really start to come together and you get the most exciting data. And then, all of that fell apart and in fact, it doesn't really happen for you. So yeah, and then like many of my other cohort, we were offered no cost extensions, for 6 months. It's either great or it's not great, but that's no more stipend. It's no more research budget. And what are you supposed to do on that? So that's what led me to have to take on a full-time job to try and also have bills to pay. So, in some ways I got really lucky that I found a job that was, I was able to go into without having actually finished my PhD. They weren't really that concerned about it because I still had the skills from it. But then, that just drags the whole process out. It's an exhausting part of it. Nobody quantifies that really. That it's something that is already stressful for people. Mm-hmm. It's just amplified 10 times over because you've all these additional problems that weren't there before.
Mm-hmm. Some early career researchers we spoke to even said that they were made to feel like they almost had to be grateful for this non-funded extension as well, which is...
Yeah.
Absolutely. And in lots of other contexts, that would be gaslighting. That would be like, why aren't you more appreciative of look how much you're doing, which is nothing.
Could not be doing
less than that. Yeah, exactly.
So can you go back and finish your PhD if you wanted to?
I finished.
Yeah.
It was just a case of extending the process was already a 4-year process into a 4.5, 5-year process.
Okay.
So
did you manage to get data or finish your experiments or anything?
No.
No. So how did, what happened? Like, how did you?
I mean, a big core of that was one of my main chapters just really fell apart because it was all dependent on lots of collaborations coming together at the last minute. And I got fortunate in the sense that I was proactive during my PhD and I sought out other projects that were small that I knew I could do with other people, and that really helped fill that gap. Like individually, none of them would have been worth putting into a PhD, but now in the context of the pandemic, they really needed to be in there to prove that I was doing things. So in many ways I was very lucky because there's lots of my cohort that are still there. They're still nodding and still trying to finish their PhDs, and that's 18 months ago, that I was supposed to submit, and then some people are still there.
Do you feel similar? Like, did you have a similar experience when the pandemic hit?
Actually, I think I was quite in a lucky position. So I'm quite computationally based, obviously, because I already moved from PhD university up to postdoc. I had all the data that I needed.
Mm-hmm.
All I needed to do was analyze it. So I was kind of at that kind of sweet spot where actually working from home suddenly all the time was quite good for me.
Yeah.
And actually got seconded quite quickly onto a COVID project, which meant even when everyone else was working at home, I was going into the lab to do actual work, which was nice. Like, the lab was all deserted. It was amazing. Music on. It was awesome.
Because you mentioned earlier about science communication as well. Do you feel like you had to do a lot of that when you were working on COVID specifically?
Actually, I just think I had so much else going on with being pregnant and PhD and this project.
Yeah.
It kind of rushed by and I never really had a chance to.
Okay.
And actually, I'm not really a kind of virus person, so I didn't want to be putting too much of a message out. If people ask me specifically, friends and family, I could give them an opinion, but I didn't want to become, you know, on social media when I don't think I'm an expert.
Mm-hmm.
I know, like, other people might think I'm an expert,
yeah,
certainly because I'm a biologist more so than them, but I didn't think I was a virus or a vaccine expert. So.
Mm-hmm. The general public, and I'm including myself, it's almost like you just saw the word scientist and there must be an expert.
Yeah.
Which is not fair for the scientists. What about you, Helen? What situation?
It's true. I feel the same, actually. So my parents and my husband's parents were both shielding, you know, they were both told to stay at home, and they kept asking me questions. I'm like, I don't know, I've no idea, viruses is not my area, right?
You should be able to say that, right?
Yeah, and so I was saying that, but I think for me it was a strange time, so we kind of, you know, we knew this was coming. The microbiologists said to cancel their conference, you know, if the microbiologists aren't meeting up, you know something terrible is going to happen. But we weren't, as a group of postdocs, we weren't told by my department to go home. So the PhD students were told and the techs were told, and they forgot about the postdocs, which was great. So obviously we all talked to each other, so we knew we were going to go home, but it was kind of, you know, Tuesday afternoon, people were told to go home. Wednesday, it was shut, and everything was shut for 6 months. And for all that time, all our funding was ticking. So, you know, I've only just got an extension through.
Now?
Yes, Friday.
Congratulations.
On April Fool's Day. It was very stressful because you kind of sat at home. I was only 6 months in. I didn't have a lot of data to analyze or anything at that point. I don't think I was in a bad position compared to some people. You know, some people I know were furloughed and they've not had any extensions put onto their funding. People on 18-month contracts, they've lost a third of their time, which is horrific, you know. So, yeah, it was a very strange time. And I think there was so little communication, you know, we didn't know when we were going back, and we didn't know for a long time. There were months and months and months where we were all just kind of sat at home, not knowing what was going on. My PIs didn't know what was going on. You know, the university was saying one thing, but each department was risk assessing separately. We're in a hospital building, so that adds more complications there as well. So it took a long time for us to get back into the labs.
Mm-hmm. Did it feel like there wasn't any sort of central decision making and
very
ways of
much,
communicating
yeah.
top down?
Yeah, so it was a bit wilderness. I mean, I'll be honest, I've got a really supportive funder, and they, you know, very early sent an email out to all their ECRs saying, you know, don't worry, we'll get through this.
That is amazing.
I know,
some
absolutely.
Of the things
heard. They've been amazing. The Dunhill have been absolutely amazing, and I think because I had so long left on my contract, that's why I was not. You know, it's only recently now that we've heard about these extensions, but they're very quickly. We're kind of on it and sending letters of support. I think from the unis there was a lot less. And I think as well, because they also didn't know what was going on, you know, there was so much.
It was a new situation for everybody.
Yeah,
everyone was just trying to do the best they could.
The government guidance is changing day by day. Then we were in Welsh government, so that's different again from what the UK government are saying. So I can understand why there wasn't a lot of information coming, because I don't think they wanted to say anything that they then had to retract and say, actually, no, you're not going back in just yet. But I think they could have done more. And I think especially there was a lot of messaging sent around the lecturers and their teaching and how, you know, stressful and impactful that is, rightly. There was messaging sent out to the students and particularly an undergraduate and taught students about how they understood how stressful that was. And then you just have these, you know, the research staff in the middle and the PhD students who are just going, what about us?
Yeah.
You know, it's quite important that we have an acknowledgement too. It felt like we kind of fell through the cracks, and I think that's still happening now. So I think there's been a lot of focus on the paying customers of a university, so the taught students. There's been a lot of focus on them, and I don't say they're having a less terrible time than we are. You know, they've also been really impacted. But I think we're kind of, it feels as though we're not quite as important in a lot of ways. And I felt quite jaded about that, to be honest. I still feel a bit jaded about that.
That's what I've always said, that like PhDs and sometimes postdocs exist in a kind of weird academic purgatory because students especially, they're supposed to be cared for by the university because they're responsible for their education and making sure they get to the end of that, you know, and they get through it okay. But they're not really students. They're kind of the most productive some of the most productive workers in there, and make sure that the university keeps running on its core funding, keeps projects alive. But they're also then line managed by supervisors that, you know, aren't, you know, trained for that kind of stuff as well, and they're expected to respond to that. And it's really hard. Like I said at the beginning, this has been there the entire time.
Yes.
It's one of the flaws that's just been magnified immensely by this, is that when it comes, it doesn't take much to crush that system.
Yeah. And I think you're right, it's that weird position we have whereas, so as postdocs we're staff, but we're not staff because we're being paid externally.
Mm-hmm.
And you're very similar, you know, as PhD students, you're being funded externally. So the university has a responsibility for a duty of care, but actually they kind of don't in the same way that a permanent member of staff or a TAR student would have. You know, so at the end of the day, if it all goes terribly wrong, we just go and that funding goes and that's that, you know, there's no coming back on the unit. So I think, I think it's been a strange situation. And I think people's experience, as you said, because our PIs are not trained managers, you know, it's been very person to person specific as well, the experience. So again, my PIs were very good and very supportive, but I know a lot of people who haven't. And there are some people just kind of sat there for 6 months on their own, you know, they've never been a PI. My PI wanted weekly meetings. And I'm like, I don't think I'm going to have very much all that's going to change is the nail colour van. You know, week to week, let's not do this.
But. Sorry, Coleman, something you articulated before, but and I think it's partly linked to what we're talking about now, about the sort of transition moment in your career. And how maybe that's where the pandemic has been the most damaging. If you were coming to those important stepping stones, do you mind saying a bit more about that?
I've definitely said it several times, you know, outside this podcast as well. But the you know, if you think about how your academic career is supposed to progress, it is those transitional moments that are keys to it. And actually, the system is built around the timing of those moments lining up right? Like everyone expects PhDs to finish in September, and that's when funding rounds start opening up and people are like, I have a postdoc and would you like to take it on when you finish your PhD? And then like, if you don't finish in September because you've had to take an extension because of the pandemic, it starts to crush all this. Or if funding falls through because of the pandemic, like withdraw funding because of the pandemic, suddenly there's no postdocs for people to even go into. Which is already a highly competitive market. And even going on further, like you said, like Helen said, is that this postdoc was hoping to be like, you know, the real builder to start applying to lectureships, you know, really round out that CV and be like, right, I'm ready for this step. But now that's kicked that can down the road for you. Doesn't mean you're less ready to be a lecturer, but from a point of being able to transition, it really impacts
it.
And it's again and again, and like some of the people who just transitioned as well are equally as vulnerable. Like I said, like you just moved into a new postdoc and everything was suddenly like, what am I going to do? Or people who became new lecturers who finished their postdoc, they finally made that leap to independence. Suddenly all the funding for new grants, new PIs dries up. There's no students.
And they're just bummed by lecturing and very different lecturing. So you're suddenly tackling these new systems that you've no idea, none of us have any idea how this goes. While trying to apply for grants and finish bits and pieces off. But
I think those are probably the most exposed to the problems. You know, because it's weird to me even to think now that we're at a point where there are PhD students out there that their whole life is pandemic. You know, that their whole experience. So like, and I think it'd be really, it's something going forward that's really different now about like how you treat those people, because you know, what's that experience like? Are they as productive? Can they be assessed as being as productive? I mean, like, I applied to a lot of postdocs towards the end of my PhD, and I just, like, things weren't coming together, so I wasn't going to have the papers. I didn't have anything in submission that I was supposed to, so.
It's also about how we assess productivity, right? And should we be going, because I'd imagine you're talking about publications or outputs in that shape, but certainly we will grow during the pandemic and learned a lot of things, so should leadership taking on science communication and things like that also be really valued as part of you have actually been progressing through your career?
And I think you're right, like the people who should have graduated in from their PhDs in 2020 will have vastly different CVs to them who graduated in 2019, and that's, you know, in 5 years time when we're looking at CVs,
you're
less competitive and I think as well for me, trying to make that jump to lecturer, suddenly the funding that we thought was going to be there has gone. You know, the universities now aren't going to employ new lecturers. If they are going to employ lecturers, they're focusing so much on teaching because suddenly they realise this is such a massive gap. So a lot of them research posts have been pulled.
And I think it's totally fine for some of the unis to start pivoting a bit more to be like, right, we're going to create more lectureships that are focused on teaching. But like I said, they're not changing how they're assessing those people. They're still expecting research careers out of career teachers that they're recruiting. Instead of looking for the skills of how good a communicator, have you actively engaged in trying to teach?
Do you have a teaching qualification?
It seems like networking is quite a huge part of transitioning between career stages. So do you think the lack of networking during COVID kind of exacerbated the problem as well?
Like online conferences, it's not, you see the presentations, you don't do networking. I found my postdoc probably through networking, and I hate networking as a concept and I hate that I got my postdoc through it, but it is a necessary evil. So definitely the PhD students that have started 2019, 2020, they'll have done nothing until now, this literal conference.
But it is a yet another signal of how academia just doesn't progress over time. It doesn't modernize, because that's just how people got jobs for each other. They were like, oh, look, this is my collaborator in the States. Do you know, he just got random funding. Would you like to go work for him? And they never even advertise the job sometimes. Or if they do, they write oddly
specific. It's really
with
you in mind.
They're
oddly
specific job descriptions.
It's so with the rest of the workforce on that perspective.
To some extent, though, is there a fix for that? Because your PI's collaborators are in the same field as you, do you know what I mean? So they will be in a position to say, hey, this person's going to be doing research that you are interested in. So I don't know if there isn't much of a fix for that, because
true,
they're the ones that can put you into contact with the people that are doing the stuff that you have experience in.
But it should be more transparent.
I think for me as well, it's not just, I have missed conferences, and I was really shocked to think that for some third year PhD students, this is their first in-person conference. And that was wild, you know, because you're right, like your first two conferences, you're terrified. Then you find some conference buddies, then you're kind of in the zone when you're ready to be for PhDs. But for postdocs. But I think as well, we haven't been able to work together, you know, so we're still working quite independently in labs. You know, I haven't really had time to see the PhD students coming in. People have started wholly online. So you've kind of lost that peer-to-peer support as well, and support with your local networks and within your institution. And I think that's massive. I know we've had a couple of situations in our labs where, you know, people have just been banging their head against brick walls trying to get a method to work. And then actually there's someone else here who knows how to do it, but because we're not all in the labs at the same time, and still not really all in the labs at the same time 2 years on, this has just gone on and on for longer than it should have done.
I think moral support during PhD as well. So even if we weren't talking about our research, having PhD friends that just understood what was going on. I think the current cohort of PhD students, they haven't really had
it's
that chance
lonely.
To meet each other. I worried about our new PhD students and just being alone and not really having anyone to commiserate with.
Okay, so just like they were talking about the pandemic and stuff, it certainly my career progression was kind of affected, especially during the early time of the lockdown, because all the labs had to be shut down and for us to go back, and before the school decided to see, okay, since most of us are PhD and we're kind of lab based, we need to do something. And so they came up with like a booking system where you could book a time. And then I was having a wife. I just got married December 2019. And then I brought her to the UK January 16. And then 23rd, they declared lockdown. Uh-huh. And sadly, I lost my dad that same day. So up till now, I couldn't travel to Nigeria. Are you seeing what I'm saying? I couldn't travel because they declared lockdown when I lost my dad. And then it was like a year, Nigeria was in a red list. You can't travel. And even if you travel, you need to do some tests, PCR this and that. So it was quite crazy.
That's at a point. International student. Exactly. Another layer on top of all that.
Exactly. Exactly. So the home student may kind of feel, overwhelmed with this job. Imagine an international student like me that lost my dad. I couldn't travel. And I'm here. I have someone under me. My funding is affected. So many things.
So how was your funding affected?
So my funding was affected because my funding was approved when Naira, that's my currency, is like 400 Naira is equivalent to a pound. So when this pandemic came, you all know that economy of every country has been affected. And then my currency was kind of devalued. And so it's now 800 Naira to a pound. So like times two of what was approved for me to come to the UK. So that was 2019. 2020 that I needed to pay my tuition fee and then have some stipends. All the money that was supposed to be for 2020 for my stipends and my tuition fee went into my tuition fee. I'm here with a wife. I don't have stipends. And I can't work because of the COVID restrictions. It was crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Because at that point, it got to a stage where I had to open up to my supervisors. Mm-hmm. And they were like, what? I said, yes. So they tried to see how they reach out to school. And my school had to come into this. And then they subsidized like £3,000 out of my school fees for me to be able to live.
Mm-hmm.
But even at that, how much is your house rent? How much is your feeding? You have another person. You can't stay in a studio or in a single room. You are now two. You need to book a flat. Like a two-room apartment. So it was crazy. Mm-hmm. But here we are. My funding is, my study is being funded by my federal government. Yeah. However, when they released the money, gave it to my school, they direct my school to open a domiciliary account because I'm coming to the UK. They needed to open like a pound account and convert the currency as of then and put it in that account just because of all these things. But they refused to do it because of their selfish interest or corruption. They used the money to do whatever they want to do. And then what federal government was trying to avoid now came because of this pandemic. The currency was devalued and then they couldn't get extra money to give it to me. And when I reached out to them that, okay, do you mind to give me my money? And they were giving me the exact amount that was approved when it was 450. And you are now giving me money, now it's almost 800 to 900. So like I'm losing times two of what they were supposed to get. I was like, I can't live like this. But they said that was the amount that was approved. I said, yes, this was the amount, but they asked you to open a domicile and put this money. They said there's nothing they can do. So it's like you are on your own. If you like, do the PhD. If you like, don't do it. In fact, as far as they are concerned, they are doing you a favor.
Mm-hmm.
You see here, you present posters, you present your talk, and you now put funders. They say, thank you for this, thank you for this. They funded this research. In my case, it's not like that. Mm-hmm. They don't care. I have to now develop coping strategies. So it's crazy, to be honest with you.
I'm really sorry to hear that, Kelly. It sounds really difficult.
To be
challenging,
honest.
And I admire that you stay in research.
Yeah.
You follow
and, and then you see me in microbiology meetings, contributing.
Yeah,
again, I'm an international student ambassador of Africa and Middle East in the University of Sheffield. I'm also in the student society, trying to just be busy and keep things going. And then imagine me, I go to work, part-time jobs, on Monday evening from, let's say, around 9 p.m. come back the next morning and I'll need to go to the lab.
Gosh.
It's crazy.
I think it's important that people know that.
Yeah.
And sadly, I mean, you're not the only one. You know,
no. I know quite a lot of international students that are going through this.
To be honest. It's shocking to hear, is that? But I think just the university being so, well, it's nothing to do with us. And I think that's not to that same extent, but seeing the university just kind of wash their hands and say, look, and the funders too,
it
is what it is, and what can we do? And you're like, actually, you need to do something. This is an exceptional circumstance. You have to step in. And they haven't.
Yeah.
And that's...
It drives home that point that they're just not equipped or not willing to equip themselves to deal with
and
such
complex
situations.
And it's so terrible because I keep thinking, you know, the PhD students and the postdocs are the people who are going to get you the ref. You know, we are doing the research that you are submitting. Okay, so our names have not been submitted, but this is our work that's been submitted. Your ref return depends on how good our research is. We are integral to what you do, and you're washing your hands of us. It's nuts.
That's the end of part one of this special episode of Microbe Talk. Tune in to part two to learn more about how the pandemic magnified existing issues in the research system. If you've been affected by the issues we discussed in this podcast, or would like to learn more about our work with early career researchers, you can get in touch with us at policy@microbiologysociety.org. Alternatively, you can read more about our policy work on the Microbiology Society website. Thank you for listening.
We want to help microbiologists starting out in their careers to achieve their goals. So we have launched the Unlocking Potential Fund, which will be used to provide grants to early and mid-career members. Everyone's personal development needs are different, so each grant will offer a bespoke toolkit to give access to training and coaching according to the individual's needs. By donating to the Unlocking Potential Fund, you're giving those who need it most a chance to determine their own future path by better understanding themselves and their goals. To learn more about the grant and donate, visit our website today.